Let's do it.
Rolls out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown.
You gotta be kidding me.
Welcome back to another edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I know everyone's probably a little confused right now. You tuned in to hear the smooth sounds of QB1, JR.
Sultry voice.
This evening. But unfortunately, JR had a bit of a thing, so he isn't able to join us tonight. So don't stop listening. We still have a great show for you. We have a couple great interviews with the boys from Vikings territory, Drew and Austin are on. But before we get too deep into that, I also want to let you guys know I'm here with Miles Gorham. Say what's up to the people, Miles.
How's it going?
And as always, we have with us the sexy prince, Yinka Allende.
Do what I do. Y'all know.
Okay, so without further ado, we will go ahead and slide right into our interview with Drew from Vikings territory. All right, well, here we go. Drew, first want to say thank you for joining me here for this little segment on for the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Before we get going, wanted you to, tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what you might have coming up at Vikings territory.
Yeah, I'm at Vikings territory writer, and we also have, me and BJ Rydell have a podcast about the labor podcast, so we'll be pumping out 2 episodes a week on those, and then at VT, we're going through some draft profiles, kind of diving deeper into the draft picks. So that's kind of our plan over the next few days here. So I encourage you to check that out. And that is not because I am part of the website and podcast. So,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We definitely got to check it out. You have our boy JR on a semi-regular basis. So we got to support
the Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, now that we got the pleasantries out of the way, I need you to let me know why you hate great quarterbacks, Drew. No, I'm kidding. Tell me a little bit about your process for QB evaluation.
Well, see, I mean, I know you like to use your metrics and you kind of average them out and rank guys. And I mean, that's obviously, I'm not trying to disrespect that method, I guess, because obviously those numbers mean a lot and they have weight and just kind of the overall NFL, you know, in media and on Twitter and whatnot. I don't know. It's what I see when I watch a quarterback. It's why I'm so high on Andrew Luck, because he does everything super, super well. And I tend to forgive him for the lack of offensive line he has, the lack of weapons he has around him. So that's why I think he's a top 5 quarterback. My method, it's not something I can really describe. It's more of just, here's what I see. And that kind of decreases the credibility it has, but it's really just honestly what I see and what I think in terms of just physical traits I can watch when I see a quarterback play. So, I mean, again, there's not a lot of credibility to it. I don't have numbers that are, you know, legitimate statistics that I can go to like you do, but I mean, that's kind of all there is to it, really.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, though. And with Andrew Luck, I mean, I think it's a perfect example, because you can't watch Andrew Luck and not see the talent that he brings to the field every week. I guess what I would want to know from you is, I guess, at what point do you start to separate the very obvious talent from a guy like an Andrew Luck? And I guess this can be our segue into a Sam Bradford part of the discussion, where someone is obviously very, very talented, and you can see those flashes of talent, but the results don't always end up matching up with the talent profile that the person obviously has. At what point do you, I guess, maybe discount the talent a little bit more and start to lean towards the results? Like, how does that work for you in your process?
I guess the difference for me between like Bradford and Luck, well, obviously there's a lot of differences, but what I see from Luck, or excuse me, from Bradford, is his weaknesses are kind of more evident. Clearly he's not the great mover in the pocket. He kind of stands in this one spot and lets, you know, with an poor offensive line, that's kind of a bad recipe. So he likes to stay put, you know, He's got the cement feet. So that those obviously those weaknesses show up quite a bit. And then last year was a few games, you know, in crunch time where he made some mistakes that cost the Vikings, if you want to look at it this way, a playoff berth, really. So those two weaknesses for me are kind of the big ones. And I think with Andrew Luck, some of his things like decision making, you know, I think he led the league in his interceptions as a rookie, but they have gotten better. And I think with Bradford, those things haven't really improved during his career. So that's kind of the main difference. You know, Bradford's weaknesses haven't necessarily gone away or improved. And with Luck, you're seeing him progress in those areas and take a team like the Colts a couple of years ago to an AFC championship game that, you know, a team that really didn't belong there, I guess. So that is my, I guess that's, I hope that answered your question.
Yep. And so in terms of Bradford, obviously he's our quarterback for the start of this upcoming season.
Yeah.
But you did just call out that many of the things that, you know, people will point to as criticisms of Bradford really haven't changed much over the course of his career. You know, critics will point to third downs or crunch time stats and things like that. You know, given that those things have been fairly consistent for him across all the seasons, like, what are your expectations for Bradford as we go into 2017?
I mean, I expect the same thing he did in 2016. You know, I thought what he did, I think it was the best season of his career. His weaknesses were still there, but he is easily for me a top five passer in terms of accuracy. I don't think, you know, he can make all the throws you need to make. And I think, you know, despite the fact that he's not great moving around in the pocket, when there is, you know, pass rushers in his face, he's still very good at delivering the football where it needs to be. So those are two things that I noticed right away when I watch him, and it helps the Vikings quite a bit move down the field. But I think when I listened to Andy Carlson's Bull Show with BJ Riddell this morning, and they said that with Sam Bradford, I think you compare it to Brad Johnson in Tampa Bay, if you're getting optimistic, and that the Vikings can win a Super Bowl with him, but they will not win one because of him. And, okay, you know, the Tampa Bay defense had all these playmakers around. You know, I think it was Simeon Rice, Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks. You had all these playmakers on defense that made plays similar to the Vikings. So I think Bradford's a guy that you can contend in the playoffs with, but not because of him.
Okay, and that's a fair take. And since we are talking Sam, and there apparently is a rule in Vikings Twitter that you can't talk about Sam Bradford without also talking about Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
I need to hear your hottest Sam versus Teddy take.
Hottest Sam versus Teddy take. Well, see, the thing is with me, like, if Teddy's 100% healthy and, like, there's no any issue at all right now, he's ready to go and the Vikings have a decision to make, I'm going Teddy. And I think, you know, the fact that this whole knee thing, and, you know, I've just always said, well, Sam's my guy because we don't know with Teddy, and there's so much uncertainty there. And the fact that I've said over and over that I think the Vikings can still win with Sam Bradford, you know, that's kind of inherently put me in, you know, on team sleeves, I guess, if you want to call it that. So, I mean, but I think at the end of the day, if I had to pick a guy, you know, completely healthy, to be in my team, I'm going Teddy Bridgewater, just, you know, because of some of these things that Bradford's bad at, Teddy excels at. The pocket awareness, the crunch time gene, these are things that Teddy has and that Bradford doesn't. And a lot of times last year, I think there were instances where that those weaknesses for Bradford kind of got in the way of the Vikings' success. So,
well, that's not the answer you were supposed to give. We were supposed to argue right there.
I know.
But let me shift gears so that we can get back to something we disagree on then, because I've been somewhat vocal about feeling like we should add some more competition in the the QB room. Not necessarily saying Sam needs to be replaced outright, but maybe we should spend a higher than undrafted free agent type of acquisition on a quarterback. And you disagreed with me on that fairly directly on Twitter. Help me understand why you were opposed to that.
Well, I think, first of all, I like Taylor Heinicke quite a bit. I'm not quite BJ Riddell, where I think he's going to be a starter someday, but I do think he's a capable backup. And so I think you already have Heinicke. You already have Case Keenum, who I think, obviously, he's far from fantastic, but he's certainly, I think, he's perfect as a backup. He is showing he can win games. I think his record is decent. Again, he played in Houston and St. Louis, I guess now Los Angeles, where you know, the defenses that he had were pretty solid. So he was able to win kind of some games against some mediocre talent on the other side of the ball. But, you know, I think if you bring in a guy, I don't think you're going to get, you know, like a Josh Dobbs, for example, is probably the one that kind of was most popular. I don't think you're going to get him to move above Keenum on the depth chart. So I don't think that what he's spending it would have been a fourth or fifth rounder on a QB. I guess for Dobbs, it would have been maybe third, but I don't think you want to waste a pick on a QB that's not going to be above number two on the depth chart. Instead, you want to improve, you know, in other areas that kind of need it, at linebacker, at defensive tackle, at safety, at, you know, all these other spots, offensive line that needed it at the time.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. And we'll get you out of here because I know that you've been recording for a little while now and you got some studying to get back to. Who's your early pick to be Mr. Mankato?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think the favorite is Bucky Hodges.
Okay.
But I'm going to go Stacey Coley. I think he's my guy. I said on the ATL podcast the other day that I think he's going to be the go-to slot receiver by the end of 2017. I think he's going to move up the depth chart there. And I have, you know, this is kind of a sidetrack, but the fact that the Vikings drafted essentially three receivers, you know, a two and a half really with Hodges. But I think it says a lot about Treadwell. And, you know, and this is off the topic for sure, but I'm going to throw this in here while I can. And then, you know, and the fact now that they're interested in Michael Floyd, I mean, I don't know where Treadwell fits in there. But as far as Mr. Mankato, I'm going Stacey Coley. I think he's Jameson Crowder in the making, to be honest.
All right, that is awesome. I'm now, as I've actually started to watch a little Stacey Coley, I'm starting to understand what they saw in him. I think that his route running is very underrated, so I think that's a good pick. I will say that when Yanka hears this, though, he's not going to be happy because you've attacked both Jarius Wright and Treadwell in one take, and he will not be pleased about that.
Yeah.
But that's all the questions I had for you now. I think that people are going to be a little upset because when we jokingly debate on Twitter, people think we're really actually upset with each other, but
I think that it's funny that the, you know, when you argue over Twitter, it's tough to know if, you know, somebody's actual feelings, you know, because sometimes Twitter arguments get pretty heated, and, you know, ours look heated, you know, I mean, at first glance, but we're both I'm gonna call ourselves elite football minds because I like to tell myself I'm one of those, so
Well, Drew, thanks for coming on, recording your thoughts here. I'm sure you'll get some responses from Miles Yink and JR once they've heard this. And good luck with the study and have a good night, man.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Okay, and we are back. Miles, Yinka, tell me what you think about what Drew had to say about quarterbacks, evaluation, Sam, Teddy, everything. Go ahead. The floor is yours, gentlemen.
I'm going to let Miles start first because I'm still still inside my feelings a little bit right now. So, you go ahead, Miles. Let me cool down for a little bit.
All right. Well, I think my biggest take from everything from Drew was to say that, you know, to kind of take a QB in this draft would have been kind of a waste of a pick. I know you'd mentioned, I'm assuming he was more so referencing to like a higher pick, but at the same time, like, you know, we're talking third, fourth, fifth round. I don't understand why that would have been a problem at all. QB to me isn't a wasted pick almost anywhere. I understand, like, the Chicago Bears, they traded up one spot from 3 to 2 to go get Mitchell Trubisky. So I could kind of understand that argument, but at the same time, you can never have enough good QBs. And this team hasn't drafted a developmental QB in a long time. And again, we don't know where we're getting from Taylor Heinicke. We don't know what the deal is with Case Keenum. I know he's a veteran backup, but at the same time, we don't have that guy to sit behind them, especially like Sam Bradford or Case Keenum for this season, who can kind of develop. And again, Heinicke could be that guy, and they could be viewing him as that. I just don't want it to be handed to him. I'd like to see them bring in somebody who can kind of compete with a Taylor Heinicke. So I don't think it would have been a wasted pick. I know Dobbs in the third round could have been kind of a reach just because we know we needed to handle kind of a couple other positions. But like I said before, I think QB is the most important position in sports. So you can never have enough too much talent at that position.
I feel you on that. Prince, you calm down. Are you ready to let us know what you think?
Yeah, man. Forget the whole QB situation. Drew coming at my boy Jarius Wright. I need to let y'all know something about my boy Jarius Wright. Now I get
he gone.
When he came
he
to gone. The league. I forget y'all forget when he came to the league that yeah, he had top end speed. But the way that this man releases off the line of scrimmage, the ability to create space and get himself open, like, is invaluable. Now, I know he won't be a special teamer. That's fine, because what he does on third downs is enough for this team. So to come out, my boy Jarius Wright, Drew's hurt my feelings a little bit, y'all. He's hurt my feelings. And then y'all know how I feel about Laquon Treadwell because of the fact that he's, yeah, he is a first-round pick. I did do the tape work as far as Laquon Treadwell. I still have very high hopes for what he's going to do. He's put in some work. I've seen videos. And at the end of the day, you know, I read some weird thing where somebody tweeted out, you know, everyone for the bad prospects, they're always talking about, you know, the hopefully they can become, you know, an Anquan Boldin and Deshaun Jackson and Darren Sproles and stuff and how that doesn't really happen. But the thing that I like about Laquon is what he did in college is despite not having the athleticism, despite not, you know, not being the top end speed guy, he was still able to make those contested catches that we don't see time and time again. You don't see it from our tight ends. You really don't see it from Stephon Diggs. He doesn't really make as many contested catches. Usually Diggs is just getting open and Thielen is getting open, but you're not seeing that guy that you can just trust time and time again to have a guy on his shoulder, in his hip, making those catches. So, you know, I don't think bringing those guys in is an indictment to someone like Laquon. We understood what our past first round mistake in for Daryl Patterson, and knowing that you're getting a guy that's that raw, who does have athleticism, but as far as being, you know, a complete wide receiver, that's what you get from, you know, so our fifth round pick, Adams, and then Coley. Is that how you say it? Coley. Yeah. So
what do you say to the point? What do you say to the point that the Drew is making there about, you know, Bucky Hodges potentially coming in and taking that red zone work that you just referenced, being that player that can go up and make those contested catches that we typically haven't seen, or make those plays down the field that maybe they drafted Treadwell for, but we're not seeing? What's your response to kind of that line of thinking when someone speaks of Bucky Hodges?
Absolutely, but the thing about, I've always believed, the thing about weapons on offense is something that the Vikings has lacked, is we've always wanted to shoehorn a guy to do one specific skill set, right? When Diggs was last year was able to do all the things that we did, what did we do? He's like, well, he doesn't have the size, he can't really be a true number one, so he's obviously going to be that guy that's going to work in the slot, so that pushes Jerry's right out. But in my opinion, adding another weapon shouldn't necessarily be an indictment on another player who can provide you that same exact thing. If anything, that allows you to put those players on the field at the same time and do a lot of different things. You know, the issue that we had with Adrian Peterson was not being a versatile back. When he came on the field, you knew what we were going to do. But now that we have a three-headed horse in running back game, now you don't actually know, we don't have a tell anymore. Bucky Hodges comes on and red zone things. Like, okay, ball might be going. But if Laquon Treadwell can, you know, work to become another red zone target, now what you have is you can use Bucky, you can use Rudy, you can use Laquon, you can use Diggs, even Thielen, you can use any of the backs to score. So now you just add another weapon. So I don't necessarily think bringing in a weapon who might have a role that you want him to play should necessarily reduce a role of another player. If anything, it's just that much more flexibility to do more things.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here too, Yink, and just kind of tag team off that. So I think it's kind of crazy, in my opinion, at this point, because this time last year, we were praising the Laquon Treadwell pick. You know, we were praising – not everybody. I know Jason's shaking his head like, no, not me. But Vikings fans as a whole were praising the Treadwell pick and expecting him to come in right away and be, you know, be a 800-plus yards, you know, 6-plus touchdowns right away off the bat, right off the bat at age 20, 21. And, you know, there are some injuries. There are a whole bunch of stuff that happened. I do think we're going to see a new and improved Laquon Treadwell from what we saw as a rookie. And I think it's kind of crazy to just expect, and I know it's that excitement period right now, right after the draft, but like to expect a fifth, sixth, seventh round guys to just to be indictments towards Laquon Treadwell, if anything, you know,
or any player on the roster.
Or any player on the roster, because those guys aren't expected to automatically make the team, let alone contribute. So that's kind of where I get that, like, people are like, oh man, they bring in two slot guys in Rodney Adams and Stacy Coley, and yeah, that could help push like a Jarius right off the roster if those guys end up beating him out in camp. But you know, Jarius Wright has the leg up on him right away, so it'll be tough for them to do it. And I just think for people to just expect, you know, those guys to automatically just be on the roster no matter what, you know, as late round picks is kind of crazy to me. And then with the Bucky Hodges thing, you know, he's a tight end and they're going to treat him as a tight end. And I know that doesn't mean he's, you know, going to be an inline guy, because that's not what he is. He's more of a move athletic tight end who can do things, you know, from the slot. You know, he can put his hand to the ground. It won't be very often, but they're going to probably force him to do it and then line up outside, you know, move him around. But that, again, that doesn't treat it as an indictment toward Laquon Treadwell. That's just another weapon in the interior that this team is lacking, you know, sans Kyle Rudolph, who's not fast. He's not, you know, overly athletic. He's just a big dude that's, you know, he's good at blocking and he's good at making contested catches. So we need that guy to kind of complement him. And I think that's what Bucky Hodges is going to do, whether it's as a rookie or, you know, down the road. But, you know, I just don't think it's an indictment toward Laquon Treadwell.
Miles, more catches this year, Mr. Coley or Jarius Wright?
Ooh, Jarius Wright. I mean,
there right you now, go. Right tell
now,
the truth.
Right now, there is no way that I could sit here and tell you that Stacy Coley is going to have more catches than Jarius Wright without seeing Stacy Coley in training camp or the preseason at all.
You tell him the truth, Miles. Tell him the truth.
I figured I'd get Miles on the spot since I know he's been doing a little work on Mr. Coley, so wasn't sure if he fell fully in love yet, but it seems that Miles was able to keep his head through all of it.
I like Coley, but I just think, you know, there's a reason he's a seventh round pick, which I'm gonna dig down and find why. But there's a reason he's a seventh round pick. But I'm starting to like Rodney Adams a little bit more though. I know it's only rookie minicamp, but it looks like he was making some splash plays.
Nice, nice. So Yanka, any parting shots or anything that you want us to react to in terms of what Drew had to say about your man's Teddy or Sam, or should we slide into the Austin interview?
We should slide into the Austin interview. Okay. Very quick, because I got some things I got to say. Get off my chest. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, stick with us here. We're going to slide into our interview with Austin from Vikings Territory. All right, gentlemen, we are live this evening on this special edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We have a fantastic guest for all of you. Austin, say what's up to the people.
What's up, guys? I finally got on the show. I finally met my friends Jason and Miles, so it's good to be here. Looking forward to talking some Sam Bradford, why I don't hate Sam Bradford.
You'll fit right in, and I also had Miles with me this evening. Miles, say what's up.
How's it going, everybody?
All right, before we jump too deep into things, Austin, I guess we can do a little icebreaker. Just tell the folks a little bit about yourself and what projects you're working on that you have coming down the pipe for us.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure most people who listen to this know I write for Vikings Territory. Probably don't write as much as I'd like to nowadays, but got a couple things. We've got a series of posts looking at the draft picks, so they're called Welcome to the Big Show. I'll have Dalvin Cook out tomorrow. And then next week, I'm trying to put out an infographic or kind of a chart or a graphic, whatnot, looking at the timeline of trades during the draft. So, you know, we had 7 trades, 11 draft picks. I lost track. I'm sure everybody's lost track. So I'm going to try to visualize that for everybody, write that as a post sometime next week. So that should be cool.
Cool. Miles, anything on deck from you?
I mean, I think we got a pod coming later in the week. I'm really contemplating, I think I'm going to do this Curious Case of Stacy Coley, you know. I think I'm going to dive into that a little bit just because I've watched a few games. I posted some threads of video of him early today, and on Twitter, and I think he's a guy that I just kind of want to know why he fell to the seventh round, just because there's a lot of talent there. So I just like to dive into that a little bit.
Awesome. So to jump in, and we won't go all the way into the deep end to start things off, Austin, but you were recently voted nice guy of Vikings Twitter, and whenever a Sam versus Teddy kind of beef or debate or gift battle breaks out, you're usually the one that comes in and mediates and calms us down a little bit. I guess when that jumps off, what is it that makes you want to get in there and shut it down? And what is it that bothers you, I guess, the most about how heated things get in that online space with that conversation?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I like to jump in just because I like to give my two cents, but I think what bothers me the most is that we have the same conversation every day. I know it was like a week ago. I saw you guys talking and I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to say something. And then at the end of my little post or my tweet, I said, but I do not want to get into a long thread about this. And I think I got 45 tweets following that. So the biggest thing is we're all dogs with a bone and we don't know when to let things go. It's like, this is the perfect time for speculation, but none of us know that our speculation is going to turn into reality until 90 players hit the field in August. So nothing we can do. You know, we can all say this is how it's going to be, and it's fun. I get it. It's fun. But let's all try to add something new to the conversation, right? Like, I feel like you two, at least when I talk to you online, we're always having different kind of conversations. It's not, well, who's better? Who should play? Who's going to be your quarterback? It's always, well, like, it's not necessarily that I don't dislike Sam Bradford. I don't dislike Teddy Bridgewater. I feel they're both average to above average quarterbacks. What do the Vikings need? And that's kind of the conversation. It's just taking it to the next level is what I think we should try to get out of that conversation.
And so when you're saying what they need and I guess what they need from a quarterback, when you're evaluating things or looking at kind of your process for a quarterback and thinking about the Vikings, what do you think we need to be successful or to be a team that that consistently gets in and does well in the playoffs?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think I'll take it a step back, if you don't mind, and say you look at this draft and you look at the players that they picked, and it's Dalvin Cook. It's a dynamic running back who can do a lot of different things for you. He's a nice little mix of Jet and Latavius Murray. You've got someone like Elflein who can play center, who can play guard, who – Zimmer said is going to play center, and I would imagine he's going to start at center. So that's a really nice piece that I think deserves a little more talk. But Bucky Hodges, you look at the guy they got from the Arena League or the Canadian Football League. You probably know who he is, Jason, the big tight end that blew up a regional combine. I forget his name, but
oh no, that was an arena guy.
Okay.
No big athletes actually ever make the CFL.
So you look at this draft class and you look at the kind of players they got, like clearly they want to add a couple wrinkles and open up what this offense can do. You know, Sam, Truesdale,
by the way.
Truesdale, that was his name.
Yep.
Yeah. So you look at what Sam did last year, right? He completed a lot of passes. He completed a lot of passes with accuracy. He was able to open up some stuff down the field. Like, I feel like his favorite pass last year was the fade down the left sideline, whether it be to Diggs, to Thielen, to Johnson a couple times, which was surprising, to Rudolph. But you need more than that. And I think, obviously, what you want out of Sam Bradford is, and any quarterback, I should say, is control of the huddle. You know, it's hard for someone who's a mercenary to come in and be the leader of a huddle. You want someone who's got mastery of the playbook. Last year was a disaster. I don't think that's the Vikings offense we're going to get this year. You got a mix of Norv Turner, and then you've got Pat Shurmur coming in and saying, well, we're going to run this. And you're still seeing concepts that go back and forth between the two systems. And then I think you want a quarterback who is not afraid to take shots. And I think both Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Bradford didn't always take the necessary shots. So I would like to believe, and this is where I stick with Sam Bradford, is he's the guy, he's the only guy that's going to be, is with the year of offseason practices under his belt, of Pat Shurmur doing what he wants to do, of being under Pat Shurmur for another year, you get some more of that. I don't think he's going to be the guy that takes the shots you want, but maybe those other things come. Well, again, speculation, right?
Yep. So what do you see as Sam's ceiling? Because for me, I guess, where people come off or think that it's hating on Sam is where I point out that really, if last year was his best season, when you grade him out across multiple metrics and don't just cherry pick, you know, completion percentage or passer rating,
yep.
If you look at everything, he's still graded out pretty much where he's been his entire career, which is right in that kind of 14 to 18 range of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
With another year in the system, what are you pegging as his ceiling for the Vikings as we go into 2017?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't see him as taking the Matt Ryan step of being the MVP of the league. I don't think that's going to happen. He could get somewhere in the middle of that. He could be, oh man, just thinking about the quarterbacks. And I hate to say this, but it's like, is he an Andy Dalton type who's going to be good enough to get you to the playoffs and then one and done? Possibly. That's what my gut tells me, is that he's going to be a guy who, you know, does just enough with enough of running game to get you there, but can't win the game. And we saw that last year with the Dallas Cowboys game. We saw that last year with a couple of the Lions games. You know, he threw that pick late on Thanksgiving. Way to ruin turkey dinner. But, you know.
Cordero Patterson, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad route, but it's another story. So, you know, I think his ceiling is – the dude was a first-round pick, like the first overall pick. So you would expect his ceiling should be best quarterback in the league, and circumstances have led us to the point where that's just not going to happen, I don't think. I want to say he's a little better than Andy Dalton. I want to say he's under Matt Ryan. You put him in the top 15 quarterbacks, like solidly, not by cherry-picking stats, but across the board, you know, his average attempt yardage goes up. His touchdowns go up. Obviously, his interceptions stay low. I think he's good enough to win a playoff game. I'll say that. He's good enough to win you a playoff game. Is he going to win every game for you? No.
Okay, and that makes a lot of sense. And I know, Miles, one of the things that we talked about a lot going into the draft and kind of through the draft was kind of with us paying, I think, Bradford's ceiling around something similar – maybe the Vikings should have added another quarterback. Do you still feel that they should have done something else? Do you think adding another quarterback was the way to go, or kind of how are you feeling about the decision to not do that in this draft?
Well, for me, I'm the proponent of always adding quarterbacks. I mean, it's the most important position in sports. You can never have enough good quarterback talent on your roster. And what the Vikings haven't done in the last, I think, you know, since Teddy, and even at Teddy, the plan was to, you know, get him going early, is they haven't really drafted a developmental quarterback. And I think that's important. I think, you know, I know people have been kind of on that Taylor Heineke hype train, and I don't really see why. He was brought in to be on. I'm being serious. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback, but I mean, the boneheaded kicking through the door thing last year, I mean, that kind of doesn't do him any favors, because that was a big move for him, because if he doesn't get hurt, would they potentially trust him enough, you know, to maybe back up Sean Hill and not even make the trade for Sam Bradford, you know, just depending on how he played in the preseason. But at the same time, you know, he was brought in by Norv Turner. So I don't know how like Pat Shurmur feels about him, how their long-term thoughts are with him anymore within that system. I know he kind of played more in that style of a system in college. So maybe they're kind of hoping he can revert back to that pretty quickly. But at the same time, I just don't think a guy like Case Keenum, as a backup, sure, he's a solid veteran backup that, you know, most teams need. But why not bring in a young guy you can bring in and develop under your own tutelage and potentially moving forward in case – I mean, both Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford are in contract years this year. So we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, they can franchise tag Sam. We know Teddy's contract can roll over to next year if he stays in the pup, but at the same time, we don't know what they're going to do. I don't think they know what they're going to do at this point. It's just kind of up in the air. Why not bring in a guy that can do that, you know, could potentially be a fallback plan, because Taylor Heineke and Case Keenum aren't that.
And where are you at with that, Austin? I know I talked to Drew yesterday. Drew was very much against the idea of wasting kind of high value capital, as he said, on a quarterback.
I'll jump in real quick again. I'm not saying we should have spent, you know, our second round pick on a quarterback, but at the same time, you know, in the middle, you know, 4 to 6 range, 4, 5, 6 range, especially with a guy for me like Brad Kaya who kept falling. Why not just take a chance on a guy like that? But You go ahead, Austin.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were going to take Brad Kaya. I thought he was a – he fell in the draft. I remember before the season started, people were saying he was going to be the top quarterback. Didn't happen. He fell. I like the Case Keenum pickup. He's not – he's a backup quarterback. He should be a backup career – or a career backup quarterback. I think they give Tyler Heinicke another chance, and I think with Sam, you've got a guy who can hand the ball off to your little three-headed monster running back attack now. The only thing I would have to say is there's the guy that they got as an undrafted free agent, Lunt, or
– Yeah, Wes Lunt.
Yeah, Wes Lunt, who, you know, maybe turns out to be a decent guy to keep on the roster, just like Heinicke was. So I'm not in the same camp as I don't think they're set. But I look back to last year and I say they really weren't set last year, right? And that's something that Adam at VT always says is Rick Spielman put him in the situation where he had to trade for Sam Bradford because Sean Hill was never going to be your backup quarterback. Like, they should have gone out and got Nick Foles a year ago. And they probably could have got him in free agency this year. It didn't work out. They got the second best guy they probably could have in Case Keenum. So I think it's okay. You know, knock on wood that Bradford's legs don't break again. So.
And so you mentioned you know Bradford being an early round pick, and this is something that also came up when I was talking to Drew yesterday. Him being that first overall pick, super talented. Those deep throws that he's able to make and the ball just jumps out of his hand. How much of that talent that is so obvious do you think is fueling? Because there is a very passionate, there might be a minority, but there's a very passionate Sam Bradford minority out there.
Oh, yeah.
Passionate team sleeves contingent. Do you think we're falling in love with the talent and kind of maybe ignoring the results? Or do you think that maybe if everything's right for Sam, this will be the year that he takes that step?
I think Vikings fans, myself included, are a very snake-bitten group of people. And when I think we do get blinded by that talent, but I think we're also desperate for anything to turn out good. Like, I looked at the draft class, and I'm like, oh, this is a great draft class, right? Like, you want everything to work out the way you want it to work out. You want it to work out and turn into a Super Bowl. Like, this is the year, guys. We're going to Minneapolis. We're going to play the Super Bowl to be the first team ever to play at US Bank Stadium. I don't think they're getting blinded by the talent because I think we can all see it's there. I think, like with anything, you know, some people are going to tell you that Adrian Peterson's still going to rush for 1,500 yards. Some people just can't get off their high horse. And, you know, that could become a political discussion. We won't have that, but I think people understand what Sam Bradford brings to the table and what his deficiencies are as a quarterback, and we're hoping that what he brings are better than what he doesn't.
Okay, and we've been doing this for a little while now, so I think that we've laid enough ground for your hottest of the hot Sam Teddy hot take to take us into 2017.
My hottest take. Oh man. I mean, it's a take that
I have them lining up at your door tomorrow, or I guess next Monday when this drops to some comments.
Okay. My hottest take, and it's something I've thought for a while, is that Teddy Bridgewater never plays another snap in the NFL. That's Woo! It.
Don't tell Yinka.
I can't wait for Yinka to hear this.
Okay, let me preface this because I said something about friends on a roundtable yesterday that got me in trouble. I said that I couldn't get into the show Friends, not that I didn't like it.
Hey, I'm with you.
Big different things. I couldn't get into it. I haven't given it a chance. Doesn't mean I don't like it. So same with Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think he plays another snap in the NFL. That's not because I don't want him to. I mean, I think I went into a deep dark hole when he hurt himself in September. I don't even think I got any work done that day. So it's one of those things where my heart breaks for the guy. I root for him. I wish him nothing but the best. I want him to make a recovery, but there is some nagging feeling deep inside of me that says it's just not going to work out. And that is hard to come to grips with. And I think we as a fan base have a hard time acknowledging that this injury is serious, and Instagram videos and Snapchat stories, while they might feel good in the moment, aren't going to paint this beautiful picture that we want.
Well, to pivot away from all the sadness so that I don't start crying while we're recording, I will say to you, stay strong in your Friends take. Friends was a much better show when it was called Living Single. we'll just leave it at that. And we'll pivot to the next thing. So in terms of kind of how you do your evaluations in general, kind of how do you go about doing that? Are you a film guy, a stats guy, combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I talked a little bit about this. So little known fact for the Twitter followers and readers of this website is I coach high school football. It's just a side gig that I do. But I've always been someone just – and I'm really not in the camp that's, well, I played football, so I know. I'm not. I don't believe in that kind of thinking. But that's how I grew up, is watching film, breaking film down. My process could be better. My charting could be better. My evaluations could be better. Like, the way I go about it could be better. But I almost solely rely on film to tell me what I like about a player. And then I use stats to inform me about that. So Latavius Murray is a good example. What does he do well as a running back, right? Like, he falls forward, he's hard to bring down. He's pretty decisive in like a zone running scheme when he is given the opportunity, and plus he played behind the Raiders offensive line. What stats back that up, right? So I find that out from film. Well, he is great at the goal line. I think 12 of his 16 touchdowns last year came within 5 yards of the end zone. So things like that, right? Like, I see what makes a player good. I look for the kind of core tenets of their game. Like, what makes Sam Bradford a good quarterback? Well, the film will tell me, you know, he's got a quick release. Once he finds his open receiver, he gets the ball there quickly. I mean, he's got really good downfield accuracy. And you can see those things in stats. Like, so those match up. And it's not always the case, but I always go to film first. Because it's football, right? We're watching a game. It's a visual game. The stats will tell us about that. But we're watching it. You know what I mean? Like, it's as simple as that for me. I have to see it with my eyes to believe it. The eye in the sky does not lie.
Miles, I feel like I know already, but where do you fall in this debate?
I agree 100% with Austin. I mean, I did play football, so I mean, I was forced to watch film, so it kind of made me. But at this point, you know, I no longer have to watch film. I think it's more of an enjoyment piece. So I've learned how to break down film a little bit more, and kind of look for tendencies in certain things. So I think, you know, I trust my eyes to see, you know, and then I use the stats to back up what I'm looking at. So, you know, like Austin had mentioned with Sam Bradford's downfield passing, you know, we always get into the average yards per attempt with Sam Bradford and everything like that. But at the same time, you know, when I watched the film, he made a lot of good throws downfield. Yeah, when you piece him together, he had to throw the ball. I don't even know the number on the top of my head, but I know it was a lot because we couldn't run the ball last year. He had to throw the ball a lot.
Yep. So it's going to skew.
It's going to skew because that became our de facto running game. So him throwing it that many times, if you kind of get a running game back, that average yards per attempt is probably going to go up because he doesn't have to check it down every time. He's not using first and second down as a run piece, as screens and, you know, quick throws. He's going to have more opportunities to get the ball downfield a little more often and at a better efficiency. So I just think, you know, for me, again, the film tells me everything I need to know. And then I just use the stats as like a, you know, why it happened and how it happened through the film, just like Austin said.
And so for both of you, because I think that's a great point. And it's something that came up in talking to Drew. It comes up a lot when kind of we're talking with JR and stuff about his evaluation process, is when you're looking at traits, how do you separate the traits and the obvious talent that's obviously there when they don't necessarily match up with how good the results should be for someone with those traits? So yeah, anyone can watch Sam and see the arm is amazing. He can make those deep throws. Yeah. He can do all these things. But then when you look at the results throughout his career, they've been pretty static in terms of the yards per attempt have kind of been slightly above average or slightly below average every year of his career, regardless of where he was. He was in Chip Kelly's offense that made Nick Foles Peyton Manning for a season. And Sam Bradford was the same guy there that he was in Minnesota last year, for all intents and purposes. Like, at what point do things, how do you reconcile those things when the traits are so obvious, but the results don't match up, and that happens for a few years in a row?
Miles, you want to take that?
I mean, I'll try. I mean, it does, a lot of it just ends up going down to, I mean, what's the situation? What's around you? What are you being asked to do in that, you know, within your scheme and within that offense? I mean, for all intents and purposes, for what Sam did in 2016, for what he was asked to do, putting in the situation he was put in with what he had around him, that eventually, you know, by the middle of the season he had around him, was pretty impressive in my opinion. So I think sometimes that's probably my best way to explain it. Everybody talks about, you know, certain quarterbacks need everything around them to be successful. And yes, Sam Bradford probably does fall in that category, but we still haven't seen him get that opportunity yet. Gives me a bit more hope than some other quarterbacks might, just because, you know, what's Sam really going to be when he does have all that? Can he become that, get to that, more of that ceiling, you know, closer to that ceiling than, you know, what he's really been able to do at this point, you know, with little to nothing in terms of, you know, wide receivers, offensive line, you know, all those scenarios, plus the injuries never help anything. But
yep.
That's just kind of my thought there.
Yeah, I mean, you said situation, and I feel like that obviously sticks out to me. I don't want to make the excuse that, oh, he had nothing around him, he didn't have an offensive line. I think Matthew Caller wrote about it and said, you know, what can we expect from Sam Bradford next year? And you would expect, with a retooled offensive line, with a couple pieces in the backfield to play around with, that he's got what we talked about earlier, with his ceiling should be higher this season. The expectation should be higher for a quarterback coming back with a better offense on paper. When it comes to Sam Bradford, and I thought about it when you were talking earlier, Miles, was, yeah, he can throw the deep ball, but his numbers were low. Like, just because the numbers were low, like, there's some people who will look at those numbers and go, well, he can't throw the deep ball. And there's some people who look at the deep ball and say, why are his numbers so low? And that's the question we're asking, is why were his numbers so low? I think football is a wonky game. I think there is so much about football that, throughout the stats, the film that we watch, the stuff we talk about on podcasts and whatnot, we're never going to figure it out. No one's going to figure it out. That's why it's so popular, because crazy ish happens, right? The Patriots come back from 28-3. And I remember, this is kind of an aside, but I feel like it fits. So I remember sitting there, I'm like, okay, I was talking to my uncle. I'm like, this has to happen, that has to happen, this has to happen, and that has to happen for them to win. And it did, right? And it was a feeling. And I feel like this is kind of like meta, or whatever we want to call it, but there is so much more that goes into a football game than the stats on paper and the stuff we see on film. Like, it's a mental makeup, and I don't know if Sam Bradford has the mental makeup to be a next-level quarterback like Tom Brady, like Aaron Rodgers, hate to say it, the Packer, like Matt Ryan nowadays, like Cam Newton back in, 2015, when he rocked the NFL. There are certain guys who just have it. It is a thing, just like momentum is a thing. We can't explain them. There's no right or wrong answer, but I feel like they are there. And I feel like Sam Bradford doesn't have it.
Well, I'm not sure how I've been able to do this, but you have gone ahead and angered Team Petty with your hot take. And you've also angered Team Sleeves by saying Sam Bradford. I don't know that we're going to get any better than that, so I think I'm going to wrap it up, unless you're going to wrap it up to add, Miles.
I mean, I obviously want Sam to do well. So, but at the same time, I mean, I can't argue with what Austin's saying.
No, I agree.
I would like to thank you again for joining us on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Any parting shots, final words you'd like to give the audience?
I think I need to declare like public war on Hoodie soon. I feel like him and I are enemies. He's good. I just want to react to this, but no, thanks guys. This is a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Glad we all got to meet. Hopefully we can do this again soon. and we will talk on Twitter like we always do.
Well, perfect. Thanks for coming out. See you guys again soon.
Sweet.
Good night, y'all. And we are back from that scorching hot interview that we did with Austin. Yinka.
Yes.
What you got to say, my man?
Okay. So, I mean, I've known Austin for quite a bit of time. And I was one of the people who were a proponent of him being Vikings Twitter, nice guy, all that stuff. But I had no idea how badly Austin wanted to fight me. Like, it was very evident with everything that he was saying. Like, I think I want to square up with Yinka. I think that we just need to sit down, you know, go a couple rounds, and then he can beat me because I'm saying foolish things. Now, Teddy Bridgewater will come back and play. I'm just going to say that. Period at the end. He's going to come back, he's going to play, and he's going to play in the purple uniform, the Minnesota Vikings. Now, do I agree that his injury was extensive? Yes. But you guys don't know the heart of Teddy Bridgewater. My man in the Sugar Bowl had a broken ankle, broken wrist. I mean, everything on his body was broken. And he muscled on and willed his team to victory. I watched this game probably like at least five times. And watching him be able to do the things that he was able to do in college, yet alone to get to the professional level and still do those things. Austin wants to fight with me. He does. He does. And I'm okay with it. It's fine. It's cool. But honestly,
it's only an 8-hour drive to Temecula.
It is only an 8-hour drive for him. For me, it's probably like 16. And the problem is, you know, I got an older car. Gas money is a little low around this time. So if I could Uber or something, you know, you got to slide me a couple $100 or something to get there. But anyways, I disagree with them, obviously, because, again, Teddy was by far my number one rated quarterback in the 2014 draft. Now, I know that a lot of people will tell me, well, you got a bias because you like him so much. But here's the thing. My bias does exist, but I think to truly have an opinion, inherently, you do have some semblance of a bias. Where it becomes an issue is when you have a bias with no reason or no research and support. Or evidence to support your claims and stuff. I have broken down almost all of Teddy Bridgewater's film. I spent countless hours watching this man in college and in the pros, watching all the things that he does, seemingly all the things that Sam doesn't do well, like win and move around in the pocket and have an ability to manipulate the pocket as he wanted, escape the pocket to be able to.
Now, Yinka. You know, I can't let that QB wins thing just slide because.
I'm not
wins are a team stat, not a QB stat.
They are a team stat. And
but they get counted against.
But Teddy Bridgewater was on a team that was 11-5. So, that being said, now, Austin did make a great point as far as, you know, the reason why he gets really. I'm kind of bogged down and, you know, maybe a little bit weary from all the, you know, Teddy versus Sam conversation and all that stuff. And I'm kind of the same exact way because it just seems like both sides keep saying the same exact thing over and over again. But here's what I'm saying, and this is why I'm actually a proponent of continuing to have these conversations, whereas I know a lot of people are like, this conversation doesn't matter because Teddy's not on the field and we're not going to have this, you know, back and forth and all that stuff. But that's exactly why we should have the conversation, because here's the thing, and this is part of the reason why I'm Team Teddy. Sam Bradford, you know, let's say Teddy doesn't play this year, and then we have a QB competition next year in 2018. Sam Bradford would have been in the league for what? That'd be his 10th season, right? That'd be his 10th season in the National Football League, whereas it would only be Teddy's 5th, but maybe we'll count it as 4 for him playing. If by year 10, Sam Bradford can't beat Teddy Bridgewater, who only has essentially 2 years under his belt of playing and 4 years in the league in general, I'm probably going to lean towards the guy that has been in the league who probably has not reached his ceiling versus the guy who's already shown me over years and years and years what his ceiling could be and how consistently he can play at that ceiling. So that's exactly the reason, in my opinion, why we should keep having this conversation, because I know the people who aren't on Team Sam, they're in love with him. But I'm saying, like, there's a lot of those people who have, you know, will tweet out early in the morning about Teddy and all his other stats and all other stuff. But here's the thing is Teddy has been.
I got a question for you, Vika.
Yeah, I'm going to keep going. So, but anyways, ask a question. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, so what happens if Sam ends up taking this team deep in the playoffs and they're forced to either franchise tag him or, you know, that long-term contract that he's looking for? What happens then? I mean, obviously, I think the personally, I think the plan is for them to get Teddy's contract to roll over for 2018. But what happens if Sam just plays so well that they can't just ignore him and let him go and bring Teddy back, or at least have that battle?
I'm jumping in. What happens then? Gets going.
Go ahead, Jason.
I'm just asking hypothetically.
If they go deep in the playoffs, if they go to the playoffs,
let's give a definition. If they go to the NFC Championship,
playoff game. If they win a playoff game,
thank you. That's
if they win one game in the playoffs. Sam Bradford is the quarterback going forward. I think that if that happens, if they make it to the playoffs, they win a game in the playoffs, it's Sam's team, and they look to move Teddy, because I don't see it being possible, and I also don't see it as being fair to Sam Bradford, if he is able to accomplish those things, for him to have kind of the ghost of Teddy Bridgewater looking over his shoulder, because it doesn't matter what happens. The backup quarterback is usually the most, you know, popular guy in town as it is, and that's when it's an unknown guy. I mean, as a fan base, we fought tooth and nail about Joe Webb versus Christian Ponder, right?
We
have Teddy Bridgewater, who is one of the best quarterback prospects in the last 5 years or so, has taken the team to the playoffs, or has been a part of a team that went to the playoffs.
No, you had it right the first time, Doc.
Yeah, there's just no possible way that the team will be able to deal, I think, with the ongoing politics that would happen with Sam taking us to the playoffs, it being quote-unquote his team, and then Teddy Bridgewater as the backup. I just can't see that working, and I think that were that to happen, if they win a playoff game, and I guess I'll put the caveat, if they win a playoff game and Sam is playing well, then I don't see how there's any way he doesn't get that extension. And Teddy Bridgewater doesn't get shipped to the Patriots or the Browns or something.
Well, that's the thing is, I don't think Teddy would get shipped. I think he just wouldn't re-sign here.
He'd have no choice if his contract was over.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess if he does, his contract does roll over. But I think it's more important that I think I would agree with that. Sam would be the quarterback of the future. But again, it's how long of the future would you have to have Sam? Because Sam is almost 30 now. And, you know, how you have to ask yourself how much longer it is before we start looking for another quarterback to start filling in. Because, I mean, if you look at what teams are doing now, the quarterbacks who used to be such a mainstay, Peyton retired last year, Tom Brady's getting towards there. Aaron Rodgers is still younger. You look at Eli Manning. You're looking at Carson Palmer, who's another older quarterback in the league.
Drew Brees.
Phillip Rivers.
Phillip Rivers is getting older. Like, you see more and more teams now that we're having to start this cycle of the next generation of quarterbacks. And, I mean, that's why I was such a proponent of Teddy, because I felt like he was in that group of the Jameis Winstons, Marcus Mariota, Derek Carrs, those are going to be the quarterbacks that you're going to be talking about. Because, you know, I just named probably like six or seven guys, but those are the guys we all talked about because they were their teams, you know, franchise guys. And Teddy was, in my opinion, still is and going to be our franchise guy. But would I disagree with the take that, you know, you have to roll with Sam Bradford? I would say NFC Championship for you to give him that extension. I'm not saying one playoff game because, you know, I mean, Teddy was a chip shot field goal away from being, you know, one playoff win quarterback, you know. So I think Sam Bradford, with the expectation, I think Sam Bradford has to do more than to just win a playoff game.
Well, I'm going to rebuttal that real quick. We've won one play. This team's won one playoff game in
15 years, I believe the stat was.
I think, yeah, because obviously they got to the NFC Championship game in 2009, but they had the first round bye. So technically you could look at it as two Two wins, and obviously it's not counted that way, but that's how you kind of look at it. So to kind of counteract your point that if he only wins one game, this team hasn't won one playoff game in a long time.
But okay, so and then you've been to
so that's so we need somebody to do that consistently. I'm not saying that's Sam. I do think if Teddy can prove that he can come back and be that guy again post injury, then yeah, I'm rolling with Teddy all the way. But at the same time, like, there's so much unknown there that it's really hard to just, if Sam plays well and wins a playoff game, it's hard to just be like, oh, Sam, you got to go kick rocks because Teddy's back, you know, with his knee. We don't know, but Teddy's back, so it doesn't matter.
But I mean, even to rebuke that claim, the expectations around this year specifically isn't just the one playoff win. I mean, I guess the minimum as far as expectation is to get to the playoff and win a game. But we have to at least get to the NFC Championship game for the Vikings organization to really feel like, hey, you know, we didn't win it, but obviously, you know, we gave Minnesota a product that was good enough to, you know, to kind of coincide with the Super Bowl that we're hosting here this year. And yeah, we didn't win it, but, you know, we at least got close. So I think the expectation is a lot higher than just the one playoff game, which is why I feel like Sam Bradford is on a maybe even a shorter lease than just that playoff win. Like, he has to – not only does he have to play well this season and in the playoffs, but we also have to go even further. Because, I mean,
I'm glad you said that, Yanka. So you mentioned he has to play well. So yeah. Obviously you are, you know, Team Teddy's sergeant in arms, but you're a Vikings fan first and foremost. So what I'm interested in is, what could Sam Bradford do to bring you to his side? Like, how would you define him playing well enough for you to
QB win?
Like, all right, this is the guy.
Yeah, he's the QB one. Okay, so the funny thing is I couldn't sleep at all last night. So I was up until probably about 4 a.m. and I was rewatching the season, and I got up until probably 3/4 away. I got to the Washington game, and I watched quite a bit of just watching Sam, what he's doing. One of the notes that I took as far as Sam, the difference between us all, Sam, is Sam often looked for the check down. He was looking for, and especially the way that we ran our routes for whatever, guys would run their routes and they would just sit on it, and they would just sit there and wait. Whereas I believe with Teddy, the unfortunate part with him just being a young player is that he would settle for the check down even if there was something there. And because of Sam Bradford's natural ability to push the ball more naturally further down the field than Teddy is, without, you know, having to put touch on it or put air on it, he could just kind of rifle a lot of those balls in. I expect more down the field than I do from Teddy, whereas I feel like Teddy can carve you up underneath and be that kind of guy. So, I mean, it, you know, stats aside, what I would need to see to feel that Sam's QB1, because for me, it's not just about, you know, the eye test and all that stuff. My eye test is I need to see significantly better pocket movement. A lot of the sacks that I was seeing was because of Sam. And I know a lot of people don't believe that, but if you watch, the pockets are sometimes they are going to collapse. Like, it's going to happen, whether it be from the interior or whether it be from the exterior, they're going to collapse. But Sam's inability to at least do things like not even just step up, but to, you know, maybe roll to his left or right and buy some more times for the wide receivers to do something, or, you know, even use his legs a little bit more, which you did see towards the end of the season, but not so much at the beginning of the season. For me to see Sam improve is I would need to see leadership in the form of more calls at the line of scrimmage. So obviously more autonomy for Sam. And I get that that's, you know, not completely fair because he came in 8 days before the season. But I would need to see him do his strengths really well. And he does throw the ball very well down the field. That's something that I've seen in him. He's very accurate when he throws the ball between that 15 to 25 yard range. He throws the ball actually very, very well. But in the intermediate game, he's not as great. For whatever reason, he doesn't seem to have the same feel and touch on the ball that he normally does. when he does throw his checkdowns, it's almost like I said, he looks to throw that for whatever reason. And so I guess I would say that is he needs to do the things that he does well to their max. And then I think he needs to improve on the things that he just brings them up to average. Because right now what I see is I see him do something very well, but he doesn't do it consistently enough. And he does the things that he does poorly, he does them very bad, in my opinion.
And that's a really interesting point that you brought up there. And it was something that Austin, Miles and I talked through, and then I talked through a little bit with Drew, is when the skill set and the stats don't match, right? So you look at Sam and he's able to rifle it down the field. But then when you look at his average depth of target in four out of his six seasons in the league, he's in the 30s.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's two seasons in St. Louis, one season in Philly, and one season in Minnesota, where he's in, you know, the bottom couple of qualifying quarterbacks in the league in terms of average depth of target. I guess, was there anything that you saw in your film study that speaks to that? Is that all scheme, or is it Sam opting for that quicker, safer pass versus maybe looking to see what develops down the field?
It's definitely a little bit of both. Like I said, Sam did look for the check down more than I was comfortable with, and how quickly he was looking for the check down. I would oftentimes see Asiata get past the first level, settle into where the middle linebacker would have been, because you know he either escaped into coverage or maybe he went on as far as blitz, and Asiata would just replace him. And I mean, obviously, in certain situations, you're taught to middle linebacker leaves, just replace it, and you know you gain those yards on you know first and second down. That's really easy, but it got to the point where you know third and short and third and long, where Sam had the ability to throw the ball, maybe push the ball down the field, and he did it. So it is a little bit of scheme, because like I said before, the wide receivers, for whatever reason, I saw them more often than not get to the top of the route and just sit and not continue to move. Kind of like it's kind of like in basketball, you know, you continue to move to create more space, but the wide receivers weren't doing that. So a little bit of a scheme. And the second thing is it was on Sam that he did have some options where, you know, I saw him throw enough passes to Adam Thielen where it was, you know, low and behind, or, you know, just wasn't very accurate of it. And it was always in that intermediate to short game for whatever reason it was. But when it was further down the field, when it was in that 20-yard range, he was throwing dimes. That is where I feel like the stats don't tell the complete story, whereas Sam is very, very – I tell people he's very, very accurate down the field. The way that he his touch on the ball, the velocity, all that other stuff, the ability to get it up and over secondary and get it into where it needs to be. But he definitely needs to improve on that shorter to intermediate game, because I feel like that would help improve the numbers that are showing his average depth of target to be as poor as it is.
How about you, Miles? I know that we talked a little bit in the interview with Austin in terms of what we think Bradford's ceiling is. But from your perspective as someone who is also primarily into the tape, what are you looking to see from him in terms of how he plays to make you feel comfortable that he is the guy that you want to be the quarterback of the future for the Minnesota Vikings?
I think Yinka brought up a lot of good points. I think there are a lot of things that he does need to work on still, especially within the pocket. That's probably where he struggled the most last season, especially. I haven't really gone back and seen Sam, you know, in previous years. I'd kind of like to take some time and go back and look at, you know, some of the Rams tape, some of the even the Eagles tape. I watched a little bit of the end of the Eagles tape for his 2015 season, which was overall pretty good. He was getting back to form because he was coming off that ACL injury in 2014. So I thought he was kind of on the trend upwards, and I thought he's continued that into Minnesota. But yes, I do think I would like to see him maneuver better in the pocket, not get so skittish at times. And again, a lot of that does do with a guy like TJ Clemmings being your left tackle, guys who can't, you know, who aren't, frankly, aren't starting caliber offensive linemen. So I think it's big. I think it'll be important again to see him maneuver better and work better in the pocket, and then, you know, have that trust in his offensive line to even give him that, you know, split second longer to even take those better opportunities downfield, especially on like a third down, you know, second and long. So we're not putting ourselves into bad situations. So that's something I'm really hoping to see from him with guys like Riley Reiff, Mike Remmers, Pat Elflein, and the kind of revamped offensive line that we have. I'm kind of hoping that helps bring some of the nuances we're seeing with Sam, because we did see some of that pocket movement toward the latter part of the season. And I think part of it was just because he was sick of getting hit. Yeah. He was just like, I got to move. I got to get out of here. He was just sick of it at that point. But I mean, I like to see it. I thought it looked, he did it well. He's not overly athletic, but he's not a guy that can't escape the pocket or anything like that. So,
well, yeah,
I wouldn't mind seeing it more often.
When you compare it to Teddy, because I mean, Teddy's a magician in the pocket. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's the subtle things that he does. He just, his ability to move just slightly laterally, or to be able to keep his base when he is having to climb the pocket, or to be able to, I mean, you've seen him make some of the spin moves that he's done to get out of tackles and stuff. And it's not like Teddy is in like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, hugely big guy that, you know, it's hard to, you know, take him down. He's like, he's a smaller frame dude comparatively. But those things, the reason why they're so worrisome is I don't know if that's, again, in Sam's ninth, maybe 10th season, are those things that Sam can learn? How many quarterbacks have you seen over their careers, for those who are very heavily, I love Sam, I love what I see on tape. Like, do you think the things that he struggles with, you can learn in your ninth and 10th season?
So the comparable player, and this is something that as I keep trying to figure out what the next thing I'm going to write about is, the player that we're hoping Sam can be is Eli Manning. So if you look at a quarterback who over the first kind of six full seasons of play, we're basically average in terms of quarterback play. But then after that 6 years had a season of being, you know, very much above average. Eli Manning is the only one really in the last 20 years. Jake Plummer popped in there as well, but it was towards kind of the end of his time. But Eli Manning is really what we're hoping for, is that someone who's been average for a while can figure it out in the right circumstances and maybe give us that magical season that gets us to where ultimately we all want to go, so we can get off that list of teams that have never won a Super Bowl.
Eli's in that category of QB wins, though, because if he doesn't have those two Super Bowl runs, we'd be talking about Eli Manning like he was terrible. So,
but I mean,
at this point in his career, and then you give him weapons like Odell Beckham Jr.
But look,
obviously now Brandon Marshall and Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard. So he's getting those weapons to help him out. But again, I just think if he hadn't won those two Super Bowls, he wouldn't be the player that we think he, you know, is, just because of those wins. Sorry, go ahead.
I think you're absolutely right. But when I'm saying Eli is just when you look at the stats in terms of kind of a guy who's been right at average, who then later on in their career was able to have, you know, a really, really high level season.
Yeah, better.
Yeah, he's really the only one in recent memory that
that
has done that had six seasons of kind of, okay, I'm here, and then one season of I'm lighting the league on fire. He's really the only one that I found when I went back and looked at it.
But that's the thing, is the thing with Eli is the two Super Bowl runs, you saw a very, very different quarterback in the months of December and January. Like, I forget the stats, but he, as far as I think his average net yards per attempt, like, heavily increased how he was doing as far as pushing the ball down the field, his ability to just be cold-blooded in clutch situation. Like, you saw a very, very, like, Eli actually, in my opinion, he shattered his ceiling, which doesn't happen very often, in the months of December and January on those two Super Bowl runs. And that's why people keep having faith in Eli, because, I mean, he normally plays, you know, above average, as far as his quarterback play, in regards to what his, you know, his ceiling and his floor is. But it was those specific times that, you know, they needed Eli to step up that he did those time, both those times against New England, funny enough. So in my film study, something that I'm going to be look at is when I go back and watch Sam Bradford, is how does Sam perform late November, December, and I mean, he never really played in January, but look at how his stats align with his film, because those are usually the months that you can really tell the better quarterbacks start to ramp up their play. You know, obviously the way that football works is the first couple, probably 4 weeks of football, it's just bad football. It's horrible. It's teams trying to get into the run of things, and you know, their defenses are getting to understand what their identity is, offenses, all that stuff. But it's the teams who are so consistently good, they usually start to run away with it. And sometimes it's always that team that it's always that wild card team where all of a sudden they look really good and then they fall apart at the end of the season, aka 2016 Vikings.
Well, if you are going to go back, Yanka, can you take a look at, let me make sure I have the years right here, 2012 with the Rams and then 2013 with the Rams. So in 2011, Bradford's average depth of target was 12th in the league. 2012, it went to 19th. In 2013, it went to 39th of qualifying quarterbacks in the Pro Football Focus stats. It hasn't been above 34 since.
When did he get injured the first time?
The first time, I think, was 2009.
Nine.
But then he was injured in 2014. So after that season that he was at 39, he was injured. Then he went to Philly, was 34th, ranked 34th in the league for average depth of target. And then obviously last year, we were dead last. And I'm just wondering if there was something in that 2013 season, like an obvious change in the way he played, that led to him maybe being more cautious or something like that. I'm interested to see why he fell from kind of just average in that category to being someone who's, you know, amongst the worst in the league, you know, year over year with that. If it's him or just scheme or whatever's going on there.
I got a hot take real quick, and then I'll leave it to y'all. So I'm Team Teddy. We've talked about this at length. Teddy's my guy. I want Teddy back, you know, as bad as possible.
I feel like a butt's coming on, Miles.
But even in his eighth season and his first game as a Viking, I really truly think Sam Bradford's game against the Packers, you know, 14 days after being traded here, was the best game I've seen a quarterback play since Brett Favre in a Vikings uniform.
Oh, absolutely. I won't disagree with that. That was the game that I made sure I watched before I fell asleep last night. He played phenomenal in that game.
Yeah, he played outstanding, and the circumstances, based off of, you know, everything you're looking for and what he needed to do to win that game, I mean, he killed it, in my opinion.
But he played phenomenal after the first two series. The first two series were quite ugly.
They were
very, very bad. And then
that's you definitely finding that groove, though, too, so.
Yeah, you couldn't just leave it as he played really well. You had to
because
he gave him two drives. Like, oh man, those first two drives, I was like, oh my gosh. He's like, come on now, it's early.
it is early, but at the same time, again, I understand that Sam was coming into a difficult situation, but it's not like we're looking at a rookie, right? We're not looking at a rookie who's never played professional football.
That's what I mentioned. The eight seasons, or you know, I think it was his eighth season this past year. So
yeah, I expect a quarterback.
To be fair, it's sixth on the field. Eight seasons overall, but sixth season that he actually played.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the reason why I don't give him as much of a pass is because just the way that I view vets. You know, I expect vets to be able to slide in. I'm not asking him to play how he played at the very towards the end of that game. He was quite cold-blooded. There was a pass against – I think Diggs was on a slant or something like that. And it was like third and something. He was able to, he actually got the ball in, but it was a pass interference call or whatever. And
hey, those two passes to Diggs, that touchdown that beautiful post route and that deep pass on the crosser where the probably two of the nicest passes completions I've seen. Those are, yeah, Teddy's had some beautiful ones too, like against Miami, that Greg Jennings touchdown and all that.
That
but
was
I just
so beautiful.
Yeah, right. I knew you were gonna say that. But I'm just saying, like, in terms of like that touchdown to Diggs, the getting hit right in the mouth and being able to stand in and make that throw. I personally, just based off of his stature, I just think because he's not as big and doesn't have the same throwing motion, I don't think Teddy's able to make that same throw that Sam does. But that's not an indictment against Teddy. That's just, you know, the way their throwing motion and the sides are. But
yeah,
I thought that throw, to be able to make that throw getting hit like that, I thought that was crazy.
See, and I get the question. Go ahead.
As we're getting long on time here.
Yeah, my bad.
I want us to end on a positive note. Okay, I want us to end on a positive note for all the people out there because, you know, CTP is about that positivity.
CTP!
I need you to say something nice about Sam with no but. Just something nice about Sam without any caveats.
It's so funny because this podcast and probably some other ones more recently have made me seem as if I'm against Sam because I'm so Team Teddy. But I actually don't hate Sam really at all. I like the skill sets that he brings to the table. My positive take this season, based on this schedule, I don't think – like maybe Teddy comes back post-bye or maybe right after the pup or whatever the case is. My positive take is – before Teddy comes back, and I believe that he will this season, I believe Sam will have a winning record for the Vikings.
That feels That's a little not- backhanded, man. I think you might. You know, my take is that before Teddy comes to take his job, Sam is going to be doing all right. I don't know if we can let that stand. Miles, does that pass with you?
No, because there's no way if Sam's winning and this team is playing well that they're just going to bring Teddy back and play him. There's no way that's happening.
We need you to try again, Yanker.
Okay, this is my second attempt. okay. I will say, I believe the Vikings are going to win 10 games this season. I believe, based on quarterback play, Sam will be responsible for 6 of them.
All right, I think that's as good as we're going to get.
He can't do it.
Hey, that's what we're going to get today. So I would like to thank everyone for listening. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me at Brown Jason on Twitter. Miles, Yinka, thanks for being on this evening. And the Migos are probably playing right now, so they can't really hear what we're saying anyway. So I'm just going to go ahead and say good night.